Ramsey TV.
Yeah, I was out in the sun a little too much. No, I hardly ever just way out in the sun. That's not my thing. A good friend of mine said, hey, let's do some swimming in the ocean, like actual workout swimming, which I decided I'm going to start doing. Now, sharks be damned. I'm going to do it because it's good for you. I looked it up. I've been here almost 5 years. I never figured out that the best place to swim is in the ocean. Well, you do have to get used to the motion. You can get seasick. It's like you get kind of tossed around. You go up and down when the waves coming in. You have to make sure that when you take a breath, the wave's not coming in. Otherwise, you get a mouthful of salt water, which is also good for you. But your host got a little fried, got a little crispy here because I'm just not used to it. And it was kind of in the middle of the day, and I kind of just like was out there a little too long. Like I say, I don't always do it. I hardly ever do it. It's probably been a year and a half since I've actually laid on the beach. That's the classic thing people think people do in Florida, on the coast. Lay on the beach. Well, of course you lay on the beach. Well, I never lay on the beach, but yesterday I said, I think I'll lay on the beach. I got fried, but was it an enjoyable time? Yes, while it was happening, yeah, it was an enjoyable time. Now it's a little crispy, but I like it. And here I am. Now, I got a little story to tell you. It was 1981, and I was attempting a run from Chicago to New Orleans. Not many people know this. This was probably a year and a half after I had done my 1980 transcontinental bicycle trip from Los Angeles to Boston, a solo ride. And I was feeling all heady. And I like to bicycle. I also like to run. So I thought, well, I'm going to do something. And I just don't like to run. I like to run. So I was going to run from Chicago to New Orleans, as anyone would. So I flew to Chicago. And right before I left, I just walked around Chicago a little bit. And I got this weird feeling. And I'm telling you, I've never forgotten it. And I thank God that he delivered me from it. And I'm going to use it as a springboard to get into my topic of religious zeal and pride. And I'm going to relate it to Romans 6, even though I finished that series. Let me just do it instead of explaining it. So there I was. And of course, I didn't pack anything. I had a little tiny backpack. I was going to run like 30-something miles a day. I did not succeed in this trip, by the way, but I'm not going to talk about that either. I did succeed in the transcontinental bicycle trip. So anyway, I was walking around Chicago. I was in my running shorts and a sweatshirt because it was winter. That was a brilliant plan on my part to do it in December. But I was walking down, what's the big Michigan Avenue in Chicago? And I got this feeling came over me. I was looking into people there, and they seemed so cool, so well-dressed, so citified, and so artistic. And I had this rush of, like, what am I doing dressed like a bum, ready to run to New Orleans? I already knew I liked to write. And I got this feeling came over me, like, what if I just didn't even go on this run, spent a little money on, like, a nice suit of clothes, and walked around this city with this air that I think these other people have that I'm seeing. I'll get a tweed jacket. I'll become this writer dude, and I'll live in a tower somewhere in this city, and I'll drink, you know, sparkling water, and I'll go to cocktail parties, and I'll become this intellectual that people will be unable to attain to. I'll be superior to everybody else. I'll live in the city. Again, I'll be a writer, so I'll be respected as an artist. And this thing came over me like, I'm just going to do this. And I felt it that I would immediately fall into this position where I would just look down my nose at everybody else for the rest of my life. In other words, I was being tempted by the devil at this time to become a left winger. Yes, I felt it. I would become a liberal. I would become a leftist, a Democrat. And I would despise the common people. And I would think of myself as some intellectual that nobody could attain to me. I would be an artist. I would dress tweedy and geeky and all collegey. And it was sick. I pushed it away. God pushed it away. I don't know what happened, but I felt like there was this wrestling match then between Satan and me, or Satan and God. Satan says, I want this guy for a left-wing, arrogant, condescending, snobby, pseudo-intellectual liberal. God said, no, I don't want him for that. And there's this wrestling match in my head, and it just like, I pulled away from it. And I was like, what the hell was that? God, what the hell was that? Well, the religious spirit is the same thing. My son, I've been telling you about my son, Paul, he got totally bit by it. It's this feeling where, wow, you feel that I'm going to be exceptional. I'm going to do something for God. I'm going to attain to a spirituality, to a sin-free life, to a moral status that will be unattainable by most mortals. And I will become a leader. And I will look down on other people, not on purpose, but it'll just be my default setting after I attain this great position in my own mind. And I'm going to lord it over other people. And I guarantee you, this is an infection like a virus, just like the left-wing thing is. It's an infection. And it's like everywhere. And only God can deliver you from it. Saul, the Pharisee, the Apostle Paul, he had it when he was in Judaism, except he was infected like more than anyone. It was crawling all over him. Somewhere he got the idea that I'm going to be superior. I am going to attain to something that most mortals cannot attain to. This is now my goal in life. In the left-wing world in my own mind, when I was walking through Chicago on the brink of either being a guy running to New Orleans or a guy writing New York Times bestsellers in a tweed jacket and a pipe, I felt it. It was a pull. It was a pull to be something great, something better than other people. And it's the religious spirit. It's the same thing. And it goes back to what I was telling you on Friday as I closed this series, or I thought I did. It's kind of closed. I'm just going to give you a real-life example of it. Where you're a slave of sin and you become a wrestler against sin, right? You realize that sin is the thing you must conquer. And if you conquer that, then you will be considered a saint. See, in Christianity, you can't be a saint until you conquer sin. You can't be a saint until you conquer sin. Except in Paul's gospel, in the scriptural reality, you're called a saint because you're separated unto God. In the beginning of the letter to the Corinthians, numeral uno, Paul calls them saints. Paul to the saints in Corinth, the saints. Even though they were a mess, Paul said they were infirm in the flesh. One guy was screwing his stepmother, and yet they're all saints. They're separated unto God. The separation comes first, then God's perfection of you comes later. But no, not in the religious world. They challenge you. They put sainthood as this goal to be reached, and the only way you can get there is to perfect your flesh. And of course, in order to perfect your flesh, it's also protecting your flesh, actually. What a Freudian slip. You have to join a religious organization that will keep your nose to the grindstone. It'll get burned even more than my nose by the sun. That grindstone will make a mess out of your little schnoz. Yes, it will. So, along that line, ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you today the life of Agnès Gonchet-Biachou. Yeah, Agnès Gonchet-Biachou. This is an amazing person. Do you know who this person is? Agnès Gonchet-Biachou. I probably pronounced it three different ways, three different times. This is the real name of the world-famous Mother Teresa. Oh, Mother Teresa, Agnès Gonchet-Biachou. She is the ultimate example of someone who got infected by the spirit of religion, which is a evil spirit, just like the left-wing thing of, I'm all that. I'm an artist. I am I am just so special from the rest of humanity. I'm so smart. I'm intellectual. I become a snob. I look down my nose at the poor people under me who cannot attain to my status in life. Religion, same thing. And like I said, my son got bit by it. He got pulled into an organization that promised to make him somebody, to make him something, and he's going to attain to it, and he's in on this sin campaign to overcome sin. He looks down at his old, poor old dad who just wrote these crazy books about crazy things, and his poor old dad's a sinner. He's out there laying on the beach on the Lord's Day. I was on the beach on the Lord's Day. What the hell was I doing out there? Soaking up the sun made by God and the salt water made by God to improve my health. That's why I'm swimming, to improve my health. That's why I'm swimming. I'm serious, to improve my health. Get fit. Get that salt water through my system. Kill all those bacteria in there. Yep, that's what I'm doing. Poor old dad. Yeah, he's just not with it. It's too bad. Too bad he's a sinner. Quit going to church years ago. Wrote these books about these heresies. God is in control. Humans don't have free will. God is in the business of perfecting the universe. Jesus Christ on the cross actually succeeded in taking away the sins of the world. My poor old dad. Man, the kid's going to come to his senses someday. I pray it's before the tribulation starts. Don't know. Take a Saul-like miracle. I've tried. I've since given up because I've tried 100 times. Now, I wrote an article. Being the writer that I am. The thing is, here's the funny thing. I did become that writer. I did become a writer, but I became a common man writer. I became a writer who's in the same boat as the people he's writing to. Just happened to be given writing skill. And so the thing is, but since I dodged that bullet in 1981, strolling through the streets of downtown Chicago, I still perfected the, well, I haven't perfected, I'm sorry to be so presumptuous. I learned the craft of writing, but since I was already broken as a human being, I was already spared that terrible feeling of superiority. I was able to be a common man writer, which is a real gift of God, and I'm thankful for it. Mother Teresa, now we're going to get to Mother Teresa, Anjou Agnes, whatever the hell her name is. Now, Mother Teresa, we're going to call her from now on. Romans, part 56, part of the ZWTF newsletter. I wrote this on April 19th, 2015. This is a series I did, a 7-part series called Death of the Old Humanity. This is going to be made into a book soon. This is part 6. And I launched, I forgot that I wrote this. And the whole thing starts by quoting to you the last passage I read to you on Friday. And this lady, this uber wrinkly saint came to mind. This lady was miserable. I'm going to share with you an article in Time magazine. In 2007, Doubleday published a book. And it's amazing that this book was even published. The name of this book was Mother Teresa, The Private Writings of the Saint of Calcutta. Where do you read quotes from this book? This lady was miserable. I suggested that to you last week. Some of you thought, how could you say she was miserable? That lady obtained some near perfection of perfection, got rid of all her sin, took care of the poor, risked her own neck to feed the poor. She went around touching lepers. The Saint of Calcutta dove in head first. Lady must be great. No, this lady was miserable. And this will reflect what I was telling you last week. That the fruit, when Paul says in verse 20 and 21 of Romans 6, for when you were slaves of sin, you were free as to righteousness. And Paul says in verse 21, what fruit then had you then, of which you are now ashamed? For indeed, the consummation of those things is death. The fruit is the fruit that you will produce in your life by a pursuit of deliverance from sin. See, Mother Teresa and everybody in Christianity misses the memo that Jesus Christ was the one who took away sin. That's the whole thing that's missed here. Jesus Christ took away the sin of the world. They absolutely don't believe that. Don't believe it in a million years. We believe it, which is why we can relax, which is why we don't worry about sin. We still see it in our lives, but we know that the life source has been severed. We know that there's now therefore no more condemnation. The old humanity was crucified with Christ. That's why this is part of a series called Death of the Old Humanity, Part 6. We don't worry about it anymore because we realize Jesus Christ did something about it. So anybody who now attempts to do something about it is insulting God and Christ, insulting them. So what fruit had you then, Paul said, of which you are now ashamed? For the consummation of those things is death. I contend to you, as I contended last week, and I'm going to give a real world example of it. Well, who better than the ultimate saint, or what people in this world consider the ultimate saint, but she was a freaking hot mess? Mother Teresa. She was constantly clouded, her head, her mind, by death and by her own inadequacy. This is the fruit that will be in your life. It will be fruit of death for death when you pursue what humanity calls perfection. It's El Sicko. What fruit did you have then, of which you are now ashamed? For indeed, the consummation of those things is death. Let's start the article. I'm not going to get very far because I'm already pressed on time here. I'll probably read just my introductory comments, which are brilliant. See, I can say that without getting all crazy because I've already realized who I am in Christ and what Christ did to the old humanity. It's a beautiful thing. This is me in volume 4, issue 16 of the ZWTF. What is a slave of sin? We think we know, but Paul has a surprise for us. In chapter 6 of Romans, a slave of sin is not someone who pursues sin as a career, but rather one whose career is fighting sin. Jesus Christ fought sin, but to billions of people caught in the snare of religion, he failed to finish that fight. These savior wannabes must complete what Jesus Christ started. So it is now their turn to carry burdens, to shoulder guilt, to fight hard against Satan, and undo the last threads of their Adamic heritage. Oh, that's pretty good. The last threads of their Adamic heritage. Okay, there we go. Mother Teresa was a slave of sin. People are shocked to hear me say this. I've said it before because they consider Mother Teresa to have been the epitome of moral purity. Even if she was the epitome of moral purity, she wasn't. How did she come to be the world's idea of a saint? Teresa's strife of choice was Catholicism. Strife of choice. I like that. Okay, here we go. Her strife of choice was Catholicism. Mother Teresa woke up every day with a self-imposed burden to live a holy life.
Oh, my burden hurts. Oh, my God. My burden to live a holy life hurts. It hurts.
Mother Teresa woke up every day with a self-imposed. God didn't give it to her, absolutely speaking. Christ didn't give it to her, relatively speaking. She imposed it upon herself, burden to live a holy life. Those many wrinkles did not arrive out of nowhere. Yeah, she was wrinkly. Here she is. I'm going to show you. I have a pretty funny picture over here, like she's in a police lineup. I can't see what I'm showing you. I'm just hoping it works out here. Here we go. There she is. Mother frickin' Teresa. Look at how happy she is. Oh, what a joyous saint. What a joyful saint of God. Look at that. She's a wanted woman. She's a criminal, actually. Not a criminal. Criminal to herself. She's her own worst enemy. She was. She's since deceased. Rumor has it. Where am I? Okay, now let me finish this introductory statement. I'm going to have to check out then for the day. But as you know, I'll be here tomorrow. It's what I do. Teresa's strife of choice was Catholicism. Mother Teresa woke up every day with a self-imposed burden to live a holy life. Those many wrinkles did not arrive out of nowhere. No, they did not. Mother Teresa's burden was not exclusive to her religion, although the Catholic profession is the mother of all sin-fighting cults. Every sin-attacking, steeple-topped enterprise has descended from the Catholic confession. The way the Apostle John puts it later in the book of Revelation is the mother of harlots. Every sin-attacking, steeple-topped enterprise has descended from the Catholic confession, be it the Baptist cult, the Pentecostal cult, the cult of the Protestants, the Latter-day Saints, the Adventists, any place where Jesus remains nailed to a trinket shop crucifix. Wherever Adam stays alive and kicking, the old Adam, yes, wherever the old Adam stays alive and kicking, owes its moral discomfiture to the plague of Catholicism. In 2007, Doubleday published Mother Teresa, the Private Writings of the Saint of Calcutta. The keynote quote appears on the book's opening page. Quote, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, here's a quote, you won't believe this, are you ready? This will whet your appetite for tomorrow, because I got more where this came from.
If I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness. I will continually be absent from heaven to light the light of those in darkness on earth.
I shouldn't make fun of this. I really shouldn't put a funny voice on this because this is a freaking tragedy. It's a tragedy. It's the waste of a life. But it's a great example to us of what sainthood is not, but what slaving for sin is. And as I read this article in the next couple of days, it will be an indication to us of the darkness of mind and the guilt and the agony that will attend anyone, at least deep down. They may put a fair face on the flesh. They may try to look like everything's fine, like, oh, I'm such a saint. But deep down, there is a struggle. There is a battle. This is why Jesus Christ said to Paul when he arrested him on the road to Damascus, it's hard for you to kick against the goat, isn't it, sir? Because this Pharisee, this proud, arrogant Pharisee was new. Deep down, he's kicking against something. I think my son knows it too. Deep down, he's kicking against something in there that tells you something is terribly wrong. I'm fighting some battle that's already been won. Deep down, there's this little prick, there's a little goat. Like, what the hell are you doing? It will take the exposure of Christ. It will take the light of God to bring that terrible thing out and kill it. But for us, who have been given this knowledge, given this information, been enlightened, we know that it comes from the death of the old humanity. God considers our old humanity to be dead. Now we can walk in newness of life. We can go to the beach. We can drink wine. We can smoke a cigarette. We can have fun. And while the religious people look at us and hate us because of our freedom, we can revel in our freedom and feel sorry for them at the same time knowing that someday God will do for them what he has done for us.